And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, with Julian Heiklin. Oh, Julian, he's another undefeated individual. I don't know, he went to Israel for 4 years to hang and chill and retire, and then he said, nah, I'm going to go back to America. We're going to get some. And what was he doing? You know, here's a professor retired from Penn State University where my wife went, and my mother-in-law, she knew who he was. He'd be, doing stuff. And she definitely understood. Matter of fact, to get hold of him one time, CBS called me. Hey, we need to get hold of Julian. We hear you're a libertarian that might know that. I said, you know what? Here's my mother-in-law's phone number. Give her a call. Actually, I did this. It was awesome. Now she helped out. Get her to be an activist. Julian has been arrested multiple times by the United States Department of Justice in Homeland Security, and they're going after him for passing out FIJA literature at federal courts. You know, and the one that got him a lot of attention was the Southern District Court in New York, Manhattan there. And, you hand out pamphlets, and, you know, you're guilty of, like, educating people on being a juror. Well, what is that? Well, it's jury tampering. As far as we're concerned, they're not voir dire, which is French for jury stacking, you know, the way that they want them to be. So this is, it's just at a fundamental level. Then you got the minions out there just doing what they're told and wearing a uniform and a badge and a gun. And they would, and Heiklin would just go limp. You know, Julian was just like, yep, all right, you want to arrest me? I'm not helping. And then to get him, you gotta talk in the ambulance, and they take their knuckles and they put it in an elderly gentleman's sternum, and they just bruise the car, gonna make you talk. Oh, not gonna talk? Gonna send you to Bellevue. You're crazy. You're not with the program. And this is the kind of abuse that he had put up with. Well, he took a break. And we'll find out where he's at on that, those cases and so on. But he's come back working with James Babb out of Philadelphia to go and, cause a ruckus again. And James is like, yay, Julian's back. We're going to have us some fun. So I want to hear everything. Julian, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you for that introduction.
Yeah, I cover everything.
Well, you did cover a lot of history. One thing I'd like to correct, though, is that finally I was tried in the Federal District Court for jury tampering, and I was found not guilty, that I'm entitled to send out that literature on court property, which was against Homeland Security regulations.
Score!
Jim Babb and I were back at that courthouse on Monday, and while the guards told us, they suggested that we move off the federal property and onto the state property, Jim and I just stood there and stared at them, and they left and left us alone.
They got the memo, or somebody did.
They got the message. Well, first of all, the memo is in my district court case in New York. I was found not guilty.
Okay, now when you went to Israel, I thought you said, screw them, man. I'm done. I'm not even showing up. So you actually continued to went through and had a trial. Did you have to be there, or the attorneys argue for you? How'd that work?
No. I didn't go there because I was afraid of them. I was giving up on them. I was afraid of it because in 2012, on New Year's Day, President Obama signed a bill that said he could arrest anybody without indictment or anything and hold them indefinitely in jail without a trial. And I said, this is not the country for me. 9 days later, I was in Israel. That was as fast as I could get there.
Okay, so you came
back. I got the first plane out of New York and went to Israel. I said, this is not the country for me.
Well, I don't know if Israel is the country for you.
Well, Israel has some problems, too, but there are many things that they do in Israel that seem to be big problems here in the United States. One thing is drug, marijuana illegalization. Technically, it's illegal in Israel, but the sellers advertise it on the radio and TV. Anybody can go and buy it.
Really?
Yeah. The point is, Israel has other problems. They can't worry about marijuana smokers.
Yeah, I'm sure they got bigger problems.
It's just that simple. This is not something they can bother with.
Well, how's he? You know, we just had Angela Keaton on from Anti-War, and she seemed kind of down in the dumps, man. She's just like, I'm wondering what the anti-war movement is in Israel before we get into the, you know, the other stuff. I just want to get there. Are they all, we got to go bomb somebody or what?
No, no. The Israelis are not for war. They want to stay out of war. It's the others that generally attack them. Israel hasn't started these wars. It was Egypt that attacked Israel in whenever it was in 1960.
I don't know. They want to get some Iran.
Well, Iran, I'll tell you what to do. They're worried about the nuclear bomb. You know, they bombed the nuclear bombs in Iraq, and they knocked, and they did the same thing in Syria. And my guess is they're going to do the same thing in Iran.
Again?
The one thing they don't want is thing, but they haven't gone to war with any of these countries. It's always been the opposite.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about your jury info decision. Now, when you were in Israel, did you have to come back for your trial, or did they do it with you not having to be here, or what?
That trial in district court was already over. There were others. I just ignored them.
Oh, okay, so the ones like in Florida and stuff.
I'll tell you something. I've been cited and arrested a number of times. I never showed up to those hearings and never paid the expenses, and they just let it go. They knew that it was going to be more aggravation than it was worth.
Yeah, sometimes they don't care. But, I mean, you know, in your case, they're like, damn it, Julian just keeps, you know, got to get these security guards and everybody to understand, leave Julian alone, man.
Well, anyway, we went last Monday, and they asked us to move. We just stood there and stared at them. We didn't even answer. We just stared at them, and they left. They left us alone. Now, another thing that I wish to let you know is that we're now going to go after the law schools and start doing there. Now, I should tell you already, Yale Law School is already teaching its students dismissal at the district court. That's now on the topic. The Yale Law students are all learning about that.
Very cool.
I've given a speech at the Harvard Law School, and I've got the top 10 law schools in the country, and I hope to hit most of them. But we won't start that until the fall because our students aren't there now. That's a program for the fall.
Well, we had another case here cited. Was it Keith Wood in Big Rapids? Where's Big Rapids? Is that Michigan?
Yeah. No, he's up in the Big Rapids. It's in Michigan, up.
Michigan, uh-huh.
And they're going to have a... they want to have, he's going to have a trial there in July, and you probably got my Tyranny Fighters notice that there's who to contact there, and they want to get, have a big sit out on during the trial. I got a response from Keith.
Okay, Keith Wood from Big Rapids, Michigan. Donna, let's go ahead and hook up with him, get him on the show, and we'll talk about that. I tell you what's going on is is Julian has made got case law saying, leave us alone, or we're going to go keep getting some. And, of course, James Babb wants to hip with that. There's a lot. He's back. Julian, he's back. He's back.
Right. This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Okay, Julian, I want to get into some, you know, your reasons for coming back, how you came back, how, aren't you married?
Yeah, well, I was in Israel for 2 years, and then my wife got, who is still living in the States with my daughter, got to be quite sick, so I decided to come back home, and I've been home for the last 2 years, kept a low profile, and nobody's been bugging me. And that bothers me. I like to be bugged.
Yeah, I know. You're like, hey, man, nobody's trying to arrest me or anything.
So, right, I'm back in business, and I said we went over to the federal courthouse, and they stopped arresting me. I mean, you know, they very politely asked us to move, but we didn't even answer them. We just ignored them.
Yeah, no, that's probably the best thing. This is, I'm wondering what would happen in a new administration. You would have Hillary Clinton would just shoot you. Trump would ignore you. I don't know. I mean, you know, are you paying attention to the president race or give a crap?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what do you mean? Not only that, everybody in where I live with my daughter and my wife and three grandchildren, and everybody has a different opinion. Of course, we're Jewish. Why not?
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and...
In fact, you know, it only takes two Jews to have three opinions.
Yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and I want to, you know, talk about your time there a little bit and the rendition threat that you were afraid of. And is that still a threat? I mean, it's not like they rescinded that or anything.
Well, actually, the Congress just rescinded it.
Really? Okay.
Just recently, very recently, the Congress rescinded it.
Okay.
Didn't get much publicity, but I found out that the Congress rescinded it.
Okay, well, I want to talk about that first thing. All right, when we come back, 15 seconds, we're going to talk about the rescission of that. All right, we'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
You know, Julian's definitely been around long enough to see the pattern, you know, to see the, you know, the progression of, you know, whatever's happening in this country and around the world. And where's the rays of hope? I mean, they do the rendition of I'm president, I'm just going to get some and you're done. And you go, you know what? I'm over here now. I mean, holy crap. Is it that bad? I mean, this is like Nazi Germany stuff. So I'm going Stalin, Mao, you know, Pol Pot. I mean, you know, the Fidel. I mean, it's just this is, you know, not America. You leave. Then you just said in the break that Congress rescinded that. Tell me all about that.
Well, I don't know much about it. I just saw a note. Nobody made any discussion about this. That's why most people aren't even, first of all, many people aren't even aware it existed. except those that have been arrested and sent to prison or are about to be arrested and sent to prison. But I haven't heard any discussion of it at all, and but it's gone. I mean, but let me tell you, I mean, when you talk about the problems in this country, I mean, I've got a list here. Let me know. I mean, our national debt is reaching $20 trillion. Our prison population is the greatest percentage in the world, and now police killings, at least they're all over the New York Times every time the police is killing somebody. There's economic disparity between the poor and the rich, and that always causes problems. That's usually what sets revolutions about, is that the poor just rise up and do it. And I think you're seeing that now in the fact that Donald Trump has been nominated as the Republican nominee. It's not that he's a poor man, but he's appealing in many ways to the poor. And the other guy who's appealing to the poor is Bernie Sanders. A Jewish socialist, of all things, is likely to become the next president of the United States. And it's the young, poor people, especially with the college expenses the way they are, that are his backers. I mean, they're almost all young people. These are the problems. And, of course, we have the problem now. There's attitudes toward immigrant groups. We've had excessive military interventions. How long have we been in Iraq and Afghanistan? What, 16 years, 15 years? I mean, you know, we never fought a war that long. This was longer than the Revolutionary War or any of the wars we've ever fought. I mean, and we just don't seem to be, you know, we've gone there. But there are some good news. First of all, our current president is a half-black man. That's a plus. And the fact is, the people who are running for president now, first of all, there's Donald Trump, who is certainly not a normal Republican, a woman, Hillary Clinton, and a Jewish socialist, Bernie Sanders. One of those three people is going to be the next president of the United States, which is a sign that the population is beginning to understand the problems. They all look at them in different ways, but they know there's something wrong. And the problem in our Congress has just been bought by money. It's hopeless. And the judiciary just tramples on the Constitution. They don't even know what some of the constitutional laws are. I mean, I've been through many of these courts, and they just don't get it. They don't care. For example, they now say that unless you have a sentence, if you're tried for something and you have a sentence that's more than 1 year, you don't get a jury trial. I don't know how they made that up. They made it up because they don't have enough judges. But it violates Amendment 5 of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, well, let me tell you a secret. They don't care. You know, here Arizona, we use it. Every time we try and bring this up, they dismiss the case. You know, Mark Victor and I have looked for an opportunity, because then they say, well, if it's over 6 months or it's over a year or something, we're going to...
In New York State, it's 6 months.
Well, they're not saying, you know, in Arizona, it's clear what it says in our state constitution. They just don't care. And we're going, nope, we want to make this the center point of, we get, never mind. But I tell you, we found out it's gotten even worse, Julian. Let me tell you this story and you'll understand. When it was a technical case, Mark goes in, the criminal defense attorney, and he says, you know, I don't think I want a jury. We're going to waive our right to a jury trial. We'd rather this be done by a judge. He thought it would be, you know, in their favor, is more of a technical thing, and they want to get all emotional and whatever. It's a technical issue. We'll go with the judge. We waive our right. And the judge goes to Mark and he says, well, we got to see if the prosecutor wishes to waive their right to a jury trial. What? Where the hell does the prosecutor get a right to a jury trial? Sure enough, in Arizona, they have that. So the prosecutor, nope, we want to go to a jury trial. Why? Because they feel that they have gotten through Vore Dyer and the public education system and the PR propaganda of whatever the heck, that they oftentimes feel better about having a jury. That's where we're at.
But let me tell you something. Neither side is allowed to say they don't want a jury trial. The Fifth Amendment says in every criminal trial there must be a jury trial. It doesn't get, nobody can get out of it, either the defendant or the prosecution.
Well, we looked at it.
Every criminal trial, there must be a jury.
The
Fifth Amendment.
Well, I remember, I'll pull it up here, but as I remember, is anything involving more than $20, which, you know, is
20.77. Well, $20 is probably not a criminal offense.
Yeah, I remember it's, you get a jury trial and anything.
That's just or you get a ticket for an automobile thing.
Well, that's why they make it civil.
Those aren't criminal offenses.
Well, they used to be. I mean, until it was in the early 90s or something, I think, here in Arizona. No, we don't want it to be criminal. We'll just make it a civil case, preponderance of the evidence. If the cop wrote you a ticket, you're guilty. Just because they wrote it. Preponderance of the evidence. And we wonder, why wouldn't they want criminal? Because everybody was going, hey, I want a trial. And they go, no. It's all whatever serves the state. I'm old enough to see that it's just a game. And now the game of informing the jurors that you're doing, they really wanted to squash that. And it looks like with your case law, do you think that your case law is, does that go to other federal courts? Does it have jurisdiction?
First of all, my case law has nothing to do about the jury. It has to do about the debate about having a jury. It has to do about the jury's right to nullify.
Right. Well, that's what I mean, you know, them being informed. Yeah. But I mean, you know, and that's one thing they don't want, you know. But, I mean, that case law or that case that you have, does that apply outside of New York?
It's a federal case. It wasn't a New York case. It's a federal case.
Well, they always claim some, you know, U.S. district of whatever the heck. We just get your butt out here to Arizona. We ain't gonna do it some more with Julian Heiklin when we come back. You know, it's jury nullification info to jurors so they know the truth. Okay, we got two more segments, man. We got plenty to talk about.
Okay, good.
All right.
Yeah, I'm known to be a talker. That's been the problem for the police.
Yeah. Well, until you get arrested and then you shut up. You know, that's one thing. Let's talk about the technique that you use and how abusive they are when you just don't cooperate and you go, yep, I'm an 80, 90-something. How old are you now anyway?
I'm 84.
So I'm an 84-year-old lump of whatever you got to deal with, and they get abusive.
Well, then I was younger, you know, by 6 years.
Yeah. I was young, spry individual in my 70s. You know, this. Is your health?
Don't laugh. I tell you, I'm less spry now than I was then.
Well, how is your health? How you doing?
Well, I mean, my health is fine. Except that I'm getting old. I mean, I can't walk as far. I get tired faster. You know, nothing physically wrong with me. I'm just, you know,
stem cells. You get stem cell treatment, turn you into a teenager.
Either that or a couple of women.
Yeah, we get some youngins. You always got some groupies hanging around you anyway. They love them some Julian. This is what I want to do is when we come back, let's go ahead and focus on the future, what you have accomplished. I mean, I want to get a feeling from you that you feel you have accomplished something. You have opened up the envelope a little bit. You have gotten some change and how you'd take advantage of that. Because I'm seeing, I don't know, in the whole movement, everybody I'm talking to over the year, I've been doing this since 88, like 28 years, and I've been very, you know, heartened by the awareness and the foundations that have been there waiting for the next. I mean, there's always, you know, starts and stops of a lot of things, but there's a lot of people who are just like, no, it's doom and gloom, and I'm going, I don't know, man. I've seen a lot of changes. I mean, of course, bad guys are as bad or worse than they're ever going to be, but their power over our minds is diminishing. Do you feel that, or you think it's going to work?
Well, yes and no. Let's put it this way. Since I've been around doing this stuff, which is now 60 years, we got women's rights, the Black Civil Rights Movement, moved along. Marijuana is now at least medical marijuana in many states and totally legal in 2 states. So progress is made. The only thing is it's made slowly. The point is you never convince the present generation. You're always working on the next generation.
Thank you. Notice
all of these operations took 30 years to go into effect.
Generation.
And of course, the marijuana thing is just on its way. I mean, but it's making progress. So the answer is yes. On the other hand, we're developing new problems. I mean, first of all, we became the number one prison state in the world. I mean, this is disgraceful. This is supposed to be the beacon of democracy. We're the number one prison state in the world, and recently we've seen these police killings that have come out. The police have gotten many places, have gotten more and more aggressive. Now, I must say, in my case, I've been arrested many, many times, and I've never been abused by a police officer. Never. They've always treated me gently. When you tell me about all those things that happened to me, those physical things, they didn't happen by the police. They happened in hospitals.
No, the scumbags. All right, we're coming back. Here we go.
Shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Yeah, I've been smiling lately.
Yeah, I've been smiling lately. Julian Eichlin, man, if he isn't a smile maker. You know, this is, I just can't be negative as much. I just can't. You know, I mean, it wouldn't take a whole lot to make you upset, I imagine. But I'm feeling pretty good. There is an awareness of course, they, them, those, the bad guys are going to be bad, and they get worse and more bad, and it's because they don't have a choice. I don't know what the heck they're going to do, but they keep doing. And Julian, he was making the point in the break that the abuse that he got was not by the officers that would arrest him. It was always the hospitals or somebody just, you know, because they can, you know, white lab coat of being buttheads. And I'm just wondering, you know, what do you think is happening with law enforcement now? Are they, you know, starting to rebel? What's your feeling, Julian?
There's too much law enforcement. For example, why is it any of the government's business what you take into your body? Marijuana is none of their business. Alcohol is none of their business.
Yeah, but they love your teeth. You got to have some fluoride.
But anyway, the other thing that's going on now is this idea about outlawing guns. You know what happens if we outlawed alcohol, we got organized crime. We outlawed drugs, we became the number one prison state in the world. Now they want to outlaw guns. You know what's going to happen?
Bad guys going to have a lot of guns.
The law-abiding people will give up their guns. The criminals won't. I mean, the crime rate will soar.
You know, Luke Rutkowski from We Are Changed was here this weekend, and he went to Venezuela. Him and Jeff Borowick went to Venezuela for 3 days, couldn't get out fast enough. They were killing tourists getting off of their planes, coming out, they walk out the front of the airport, boom. And he goes, they're mopping up blood in front of them as they're going, holy crap, no security can have guns. The hotels, they put their carts in front of the doors to try and slow them down half a second or something. I mean, it is just terrible. Why? Because you can't have any guns. And I'm just going, this is, and so of course, the only people that have guns are the cartels. But I'm with you, brother. I'm wondering, from your perspective, was there a change in America and attitudes or anything from the time that you were in Israel and you came back?
No, it's getting a little bit, I mean, more aggressive that they want to get gun control or outlaw guns. The problem is that oh, when you outlaw guns, it's only the people that aren't causing the trouble that give up their guns. The criminals aren't going to give up their guns. And they keep advertising how many people are killed with guns and all that sort of thing. But first of all, accidental deaths in this country are about 800 a year, which is trivial compared to other kinds of problems. There are about 30,000 people a year that are killed by guns. 13,000 of those are suicides. They're going to kill themselves some other way. You know, but they never bring this out. And it's not the law-abiding people that kill. Those are the ones that get into the newspaper. Man kills son. Son kills man at home. They get in the newspaper because they're such rare incidents. And did you ever know where these massive gun violences occur? They occur at public schools. They occur at universities. They occur on military bases. You know why? Because guns are outlawed in those places. That's exactly why they have those mass murders happen at those places. If it weren't for that, if a guy started a mass murder, he'd be shot down fast.
Well, here in Arizona, they get shot
back. I don't know of any case where a guy has been murdered at a gun show.
You know, Julian, aren't you Jewish? I mean, come on, man. I thought you were supposed to be anti-gun. What up?
Because I know reality. Most Jews are guns, but you know why? First of all, they're in higher financial situations, and they make their money through monetary crime, not through holding people up. Jewish criminals are, I don't know if you know, they're monetary criminals.
They wear ties.
You never hear of Jews going out and shooting people. Here, in Israel, it's different. But it's only the military that's shooting. But, of course, everybody's in the military. Everybody in Israel has a gun at home, by law.
Yeah, is it gun control is even a thing there?
They have gun control in Israel. Everybody has to control one at home. Everybody who's been in the military.
Yeah,
which
okay.
is every male after a certain age, and now a lot of females. And you walk down the streets in Jerusalem. There's guys with guns all over. I get on a bus. There's a soldier with a gun. In fact, I was on a bus once in Israel where there was an incident, and a soldier with the gun walked over to the people. And that solved the problem.
Said, I got a gun. Yep, you do. Just be good.
He didn't say I got a gun. It was obvious.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. Of course, you know, there are so many. We could talk about so much stuff. But the main thing that I want to do is, while you're back, what prompted you to get involved again? You're just like, okay, they're not going to be able to rendition me right away. They changed that. Or something motivated you. What got you all motivated?
I've been over here for 2 years now, and I've been not doing much of anything. I've been thinking of the family, and I finally decided it's time to get into action again. And
why? I mean, what brought that on? Just you're being bored?
What brought that on? I read the news. I'm an American citizen.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I've done this all my life. I just can't stand it anymore.
How are you feeling about getting back in? Of course, James Babb always keep your spirits up and, you know, have something fun to do, you know. But I love working with James. We got a new newspaper coming out this week, and James has got some goodie in there. So, you know, I'm always looking forward to working with you and James. So what can we do here in Arizona to have some fun in this election cycle?
Oh, have some fun. Well,
fun. All about fun.
I'll tell you what I'm doing here, of course. I pass out jury information at the courts. That doesn't directly help the election cycle, but helps. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure that you should get involved in helping in the election cycle. That's a political situation. You're talking about who to support and who not to support. I don't think that's appropriate. People support people, as I say, in my household. I've got Bernie Sanders supporters, Hillary Clinton supporters, I think a Trump supporter. I'm a libertarian, so I'll support the libertarian candidate. Everybody in our house supports somebody else.
Well, your household's going to have a win regardless, unless there's that guy, you know, kind of, I vote none. That James Babb thing. Yeah, nobody's going to stop raising my taxes. Nobody's going to stop the war, so I'm voting for nobody.
Yeah, but none rarely wins.
Yeah, it's starting to in your head.
Anyway,
man.
One thing I'm sure is that in my household, there's somebody who's going to get the candidate of their choice. I don't know who it is, but somebody will.
Oh, man, the selection that we have, oh, my God. At least on the libertarian side, there might be some entertainment. There's some wide range of choices. You know, having Daryl Perry, I vote for, like, you know, eliminating one level of government, the federal. what he said, you know. So it'll be entertainment. We're going to have our newspaper in all the convention bags at the in Orlando at the LNC, you know, convention. But I'm not sure. I don't think I'm going to be going. I just can't muster up.
I'm not going either.
I can't muster up enough. Give a crap. But the we'll see. You know, there's all, you know, things change. I'm looking forward to seeing what Julian has in him. He's going to get something. I don't know. Can you count on Julian getting arrested? You used to before.
No,
I don't know.
No, no.
They don't think so?
Well, they may. I'm thinking of starting the marijuana smokehouse again.
Okay, all right. We'll talk about it when we come back. What we're going to do to get him arrested. Okay, Julian, when we come back, this last segment here, you know, kind of what's going to keep you busy, what you want to have happen, what you're going to, is it just entertainment for you, or you want to inspire another round of everybody to go get some, or what?
Okay. Well, one of the things I'm thinking of doing is...
Oh, tell me on the air. Tell me on the air.
Okay.
We'll be back in like 40 seconds. That's where we'll go. Man, what is Julian going to do to change the planet this time, and how?
Right.
You know, or at least, you know, entertain himself. All right, we'll be right back.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Where is the love?
I feel the weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people gets colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
It's right here with Julian Heichblatt. I'm sharing the love with you. I'll show you some love. Oh, that is from above. Yep. Julian, you know, that's one thing. You know, are you a spiritual guy? I mean, did you get the, you know, inspiration from your faith or anything, and just this is going to just happen the way it's supposed to happen, or not?
No, it all happened when I was a young boy. I don't know, about 10 or 11 years old, and I was sick in bed, and my uncle gave me a copy of the United States Constitution. I don't know whether I should praise him or hate him for this, but it affected my life.
Why? What did you read in there that all of a sudden, was it the Bill of Rights? Was there some enumerated power thing that got your interest? I mean, what got your interest?
Well, it was mostly the Bill of Rights, but I mean, I read the whole thing, and... he was a councilman in Boston and very much of an advocate. He's the guy who got Jackie Robinson into the first black man into baseball.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was a relatively important person in his personality. He wasn't nationally known, but... And he fought. What he did was when the Boston Red Sox didn't want to interview Jackie Robinson, he told them, he says, well, you know, he says... I could go to the council and we could eliminate Sunday baseball. They interviewed Jackie Robinson.
Hey, you know
him,
what?
But
we'll just take care of
that's
that.
That's exactly how he did it. He said, all right, you don't want to bring in Jackie Robinson? I'll end Sunday baseball.
Really?
That's okay. Exactly what he told them, right to their face. And they brought him in. They didn't hire him, but then the Yankees picked him up. That was the first, that's how the blacks got into baseball. And that's the guy that's now destroyed my life. or built it. I don't know which.
But what is it that, you know, prompted? Is it just a justice? You know, I'm finding out, you know, as time goes on, there's different personality types, and it's just that justice gene, I call it. I mean, it's just you can't let an injustice go by without something hardwired in you. And do you feel that? Is that a motivation? It's just an injustice that needs to be fixed?
And this was basically the beginning of it, it's all my uncle's fault. I put the whole blame on him.
Well, this is what year, man? We're looking back, you know, and you're 12, kind of, that's like in the 20s, 30s?
I never recovered. What can I do? It was a permanent illness.
Yeah, okay.
You know, this isn't the first thing I did. In the 1960s, I worked with the Congress of Racial Equality. I lived in Los Angeles. I was the action chairman and the housing chairman. We ended segregation in California in 1963. Segregation was not only against blacks, it was against Asian people and against Mexicans. Blacks weren't the only ones that couldn't buy houses. And we did it, and you know how we did it. We had a lady come to us, a couple, and said she wanted to buy this house in this tract. And they said, well, you've got to get a mortgage. So she raised the money. She came back. She says, okay, I don't need a mortgage. I'll pay cash. They said, oh, we're sorry. It's sold. So she came to the Congress of Racial Equality and told the story. I said, all right. Next week, I send out a woman to see if the house was sold. Oh, no, the guy was all over. You take this house. So the following Sunday, I went to the thing and said, I'm her husband. I got to measure some stuff in the house, and we're thinking of buying it. Oh, here's a key. Go on. So I got a key, I got into the house, the Congress of Racial Equality moved into the house, our publicity people sent letters of this to the president and the attorney general and the governor and everybody else around, and it hit all the newspapers. We were the front page in the Los Angeles Times, and we sat there for 3 weeks. We were arrested four times. Finally, I went to court, and the judge made a very interesting decision. He says, look, he says, you guys are guilty of trespassing. He went to the guy who was the owner of the cellar. He says, you know, in this state, there's a law that says you can't discriminate in business. And if you do, there's a fine of $100. This was a guy that had $200 million worth of homes. Okay? He said, so if you do it again, this is what will happen. A week later, the guy sold the house to the woman, opened up all his tracks in California to anybody wanted to come. The big mortgage bank in Los Angeles called me in. They said, okay, we're going to start giving mortgages to blacks. I mean, you know, these guys were bigots. It was just a financial thing. They realized that this was the way, you know, to save their businesses. And he said, okay, and then he said, I want you to send a black woman to me to be an executive secretary to be sure that it's enforced. And we did. We sent one of the core ladies who went to become his executive secretary.
You know, this is, I was talking to Angela Keaton from antiwar.com the hour before you, mm-hmm. And I remember the most effective things were like that. It was always financial. It was boycotts. It was, so I'm going, you know, for the anti-war movement, I'm looking for, you know, companies that have diversified in the house appliances that gotten part of the military industrial, but we're going to do and sell you, you know, better batteries or something. And I'm just, there needs to be a financial angle on this. There needs to be a, you know, it's going to cost them some money and PR. And, you know, that war is unpopular. And, you know, if I can get, and
it's financially remunerative.
Well, got to make it not.
You can't make it not. It costs money to run a war.
Yeah.
You got to have a different angle on that.
I got an idea. I'm thinking. I'm
okay. All right. You got an angle.
I got an angle.
Let me know. One of the things I think is we've been involved now in two wars for, I mean, one of them has been 15 years.
Well, they haven't felt the pain. You know, the one thing is, like, when you have Lockheed or something like that, I mean, their only customer is the government, so they don't care. But a lot of these companies, they got others. I mean, you know, what reminded me, it was Smith & Wesson. It was a gun thing, and they sided with the government. We're going to do smart technology, and we support the government and pick us for all your contract government. And the parent company owned, like, Murray lawnmowers or something, and it became a big giant boycott on some of their other businesses, and it had such an immediate impact that they bailed on that. They sold Smith & Wesson. They got out. Oh, hell no. We don't want to play this game. And I've seen the power of this. So I think that's where I'm going to focus some attention this year.
All right. That's good. That's not particularly my bag. I'm not a financial guy. I mean, the country has enormous financial problems.
Yeah.
But I'm not the guy to solve them. You got to talk to my daughter.
Yeah, bring her on.
she's the chief auditor for Credit Suisse.
Really?
Yeah.
That might be something.
We live in a house here in Teaneck, New Jersey, with her and the kids, but she's never home. She's in Singapore, she's in China, she's in India, she's in Tokyo, she's in London, she's in Poland, and of course, the headquarters are in Switzerland. She just travels around the world and shows up occasionally on a weekend.
Now, let me ask some questions I'll send to you, and you just say, hey, read this one pager from Ernie and maybe have an opinion about it, something. I've got, see, that's how we get your household going, man. You know, turn her into an activist. Well, are they supportive of what you're doing, Julian? Or are they like, good, Dad, go get them?
Well, they don't say go get them. They'd rather I stay home. But mostly because of the concern for me, which is touching, but they certainly are impressed and approve of what I'm doing in principle, as long, if only I weren't doing it.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. Well, I'm glad you're doing it. I mean, just because I don't know what's going to happen if Julian's not there. It sure as hell won't be as much fun, you know, and have the credibility that you bring to it, and the method and the persistence and the consistency and the inspiration that you have for others. And this is a lot of people, I just want to make sure they know that you're a retired professor from Penn State, right?
Right.
You know, so this is, and I remember a lot of the activities, you're out smoking on, you know, marijuana at 4:20 in the afternoon in front of the camp, and that's how my mother-in-law knew you. Oh, yeah, I know, Julian.
Let me tell you something. So you bring up that. That's something that I'm thinking right now of redoing in New Jersey in front of the state capitol, is having marijuana smoke out.
Oh!
There are two very important people in this state that could help me. One is, do you know who Ed Fortune is?
No.
Okay, he's a guy he's a minister of some exotic religious group. I don't even know the name. I mean, I don't know how many people there are. And anyway, he publicly smokes marijuana in front of everybody. He's been arrested several times. He's put in prison. He's got a court case going on now, but he doesn't care.
And what's his position?
I don't know if he has a position.
Oh, I thought you said he was in the government or something.
Oh, no. He's not in the government.
Oh, okay. And
he runs away. He drives around in a truck which advertises marijuana smoking on the sides of it.
Got it.
I mean, he's blatant. And he's been arrested. He's going to trial now. Actually.
What, you weren't blatant in front of Penn State?
I was blatant in front of Penn State. Okay, now, the other person in this state who lives right near Trenton, actually, is a woman by the name of Diane Fornbacher. When I did the marijuana smokeouts at Penn State, she was an 18-year-old girl, a big mouth. She was the mouth of the operation. Now she's working with the marijuana people in the state. She knows all the state laws and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to try and get her to come out and be my mouthpiece. So if I can get in her, I mean, the point is about New Jersey, it's got two very critical people, Ed Fortune and Diane Fornbacher, who I really know about this stuff and have been deep into it for a long time with her, since she was in college with me smoking out there. And she's still very active in the state and trying to get this thing legalized, you know, going through ordinary procedures rather than smokeouts. But I think if I smoke out in front of the state house for a while, we'll at least get news coverage.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking somebody's going to pay attention to whatever you do. I want to. I'm glad you're hooked up with James. James has always got it going on, and
James is. The point is, James is organized all of those. He organized those demonstrations at all the airports when they made people go through the...
Oh, yeah. No, we were a big part of that here.
No. James is an all-over-the-country well-known guy. I mean, I'm a small fry compared to James.
Well, he definitely has a soft spot for you, you know, and it's and so do I. So, what about, festivals or anything like Pork Fest or any of that? You going to be traveling to come visit people again?
Jim asked me to come up to Pork Fest this year. It turned out it's the week that I'm visiting my family down in North Carolina, so I won't be able to go. But I've been to a number of Pork Fests in the past, and in the future I'll probably... go to them if I don't have some.
Oh, no, we've been partying with you at Pork Fest. He gets down.
So I would have gone this year, but I have a conflict, family conflict.
Hey, Julian, yeah, we've been in, we're at the end of the show. I just let you go, instead of, breaking your stride there, but we're done. But I really appreciate you coming on and spending time. It's good to have you back, man.
Well, I appreciate your having me. I mean, it's publicity. This game is all a publicity game. You just got to stir everybody up and get them in. One thing I want to tell you about police, even though I've been arrested many times, I've never been mishandled by a police officer. But I know what to do. You don't start an argument with them, and you don't keep your hands in your pocket. That's sure to bring out their guns.
Yeah.
Okay. If you know these things, and of course I'm also an old man that they figure I can't possibly beat them up, so I have that advantage. But any guy that's in there, if you keep your hands in your pockets or you try to run away, you're asking to be shot.
Yeah, no, I respect my
authority. Remember, look at it from the policeman's point of view. He's as worried as you are.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. Well, it's always good to have you there. Just probably less likely, too much of a beatdown. But I'm glad you're back in it. Just take care of yourself. Don't get hurt.
Well, thank you for having me. I never get hurt on these things because as soon as anything happens, I just fall to the ground. And as I say, they treat me gently until they put me in the ambulance when the ambulance guys start beating me. They claim it, to try to get me to talk again. But, I mean, I've come away from those things black and blue many times.
Oh, God, that's just so... get some. All right,
Then they send me bills for treatment. And I tell them, I'm sorry you ought to send this bill to the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, good job. Hey, it's always good to catch up with you, Julian. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right. Thank you for having me. I mean, it's great publicity, and it's nice talking to you.
Always.
I'd be happy to do it again if you're willing.
Oh, no. We're going to get you on a regular basis. I guarantee.
In fact, I used to, when I was in Israel, I was writing articles for Donna about something. I don't know if she wants to go back to that or not. For the moment, I don't have anything yet to...
Chop! Waiting on you now. I'll publish anything you write.
So at the moment... I don't have much to write, but in a few more months, I'll have plenty, I'm sure.
All right, cool. Well, it's good talking to you, Julian. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, peace, brother. Bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
We've got Today Now's medical expert, Dr. Kareem Mazari, here to give us some tips on how to convince a stubborn little guy to take off his Spider-Man costume and start wearing normal clothes so people don't think he's a weirdo. And also joining us is my son, Spencer, still dressed as Spider-Man. Spencer?
Hi, Mom.
I find the best thing to do is to try and have a dialogue with your child. Now, Spencer, why won't you take your costume off?
Because then people will know my true identity.
You're not even wearing the mask! People already know who you are!
Well, bargaining can work. Explain to your child...
Bargaining? Is it not enough that I say take off the Spider-Man costume? Now I've got to bargain with my own child? Jesus Christ! Spencer, sit down. Sit down. Do you want to be put in the silence trunk again? You don't like the silence trunk, do you?
Okay.
I'm Spider-Man!
Spencer, sit down right now. Sit down, you little face, or I will break the rest of your toys on purpose. Do you understand me?
This is the Onion News Network.